Tri-County Contracting, worry-free roofing, siding, and windows. To sign up for a free estimate, get info on their worry-free roof tune-up or their free yearly roof inspections, or to get an instant roof quote, visit them online at tricountycontractingwi.com.
3.5-4 hours at most.
No.
Come get
no.
me. I'm
Human
right
nature,
here.
No.
Nothing wants to eat me.
You will survive.
I'll never get out of here.
Your body will try to survive.
It'll get lost at the zoo. I'm done.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here's Eric Bilstad and Vince Petrano.
This morning, National Weather Service will be out in Lafayette County, Wisconsin, working to confirm a possible seventh twister that touched down in the weekend's tornado outbreak.
I was already scared of storms, but I never thought that I'd experience something like this here. I felt like the house was going to get carried away.
That's a woman in Janesville talking with WISC-TV out of Madison, says she's got at least $40,000 damage to her home. Another woman here in Janesville.
I have no idea what we're going to do from here. Quite a bit of the roof blew off. I lost two trees in the back and a pine tree in the front.
Six already confirmed twisters as part of this outbreak Saturday evening, including two in the Lake Geneva area, where Eric was.
Yeah. Got to live through that one. Williams Bay, we were in that one.
WTMJ meteorologist Craig Copleen, among those keeping you safe, getting you down in the basement. He was on air taking you all through it Saturday night as well, live with us this morning. Hey, Craig.
Hey, good morning, guys.
So what stood out to me, Craig, from your coverage, from what we were seeing on TV, from Nisnansky and Brendan Johnson over there on 4 as well, was just how sure they were, based on what you all were seeing on radar, that this wasn't a rotation tornado, that these were tornadoes that were on the ground. Can you take us through what you were seeing on radar that was so concerning that night?
There's a relatively new feature of Doppler radar that not only shows us that there are raindrops out in the air, that's typical radar, not only shows us the direction that the raindrops are moving, that's the Doppler in the Doppler radar. And if we see spinning, circulating raindrops, we can infer that there's a tornado there because the raindrops are spinning in a circular fashion. But there's a relatively new feature there that now shows us debris in the sky. And the way it does that is the radar beam goes out and it is able to tell us when it's hitting objects that are a tremendously different shape and size than regular old raindrops. So when we see this indication on radar that there's all kinds of stuff in the air that's not round or oblong raindrops, we can infer that that is debris from the ground, sheet metal, pieces of trees, pieces of homes, anything that the tornado can blow aloft up into the atmosphere. That's an indication that there's a tornado there causing that to happen. And we saw that in most of the cases on Saturday night. And that's why we could be so sure that these were tornadoes in progress as we were talking about them.
What's so amazing to me, Craig, is that when we got up Sunday morning in Williams Bay and we're looking at the damage, just the size and the enormity of some of these trees, these old oaks that just have, you know, a trunk that you can't even hug. It's so big, that are just sawed off almost and just down. Just that Mother Nature can be that strong in just a matter of moments.
And these weren't even, these weren't major, huge
right.
tornadoes. This wasn't Barneveld. This wasn't Oakfield. This wasn't the types of tornadoes that they get all too frequently in Kansas and Oklahoma. But that just gives you, even more reason to understand that even a weak tornado, weakish on the tornado scale, weakish tornado is still a tornado. And it still has the capability of maybe not doing damage on a path as wide as a mile, but wherever it does hit, even if it's a quarter mile path, it is going to take down even the most mature of trees and even the most sturdy of built structures.
And the other thing that stood out about Saturday's outbreak, Craig, was a number of these were in populated areas. You had two in the Lake Geneva area, Fontana and then Williams Bay. And one headed right toward Watertown. You had Janesville. You know, that's another thing. A tornado out in the middle of nowhere could be impressive, but it's not really going to affect a whole lot of people. These were coming right at population centers.
Yeah, exactly. We noticed that, too, as we were watching one of the many things we were watching on Saturday night were the power outage maps coming from We Energies and the other power companies. You know, when the storms are going through somewhat rural areas, you're not going to get a lot of power outage reports. But as the storms got into more populated areas in the South Central and, of course, the Southeast part of the state, you see more power outages. Yeah, this happened to be one of the cases where just too many populated cities were in the wrong place.
You know, Craig, Vince and I were talking earlier about just sometimes we're in cycles, right? Oh, it's going to be a wetter than average spring or something to that effect. Or, you know, there's going to be more snowfall this winter or whatever. Are we in some type of cycle right now with the severe weather?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you definitively one way or another. This is a little bit of what they say in the investment industry. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Yeah. So indeed, in hindsight, we can look back and say, boy, we have been in a cycle. We have been in a weather pattern where we have had these somewhat frequent periods of powerful thunderstorms moving through southern Wisconsin. But we don't necessarily, we can't necessarily say that this is going to continue for a couple more weeks or throughout the summer. We have to take it day by day and week by week and analyze the weather pattern that were presented at any point in time.
Talking with WTMJ meteorologist Craig Coplin. So on that, Craig, chance for showers and storms tonight. Some could be severe. I have a question that someone texted in that we'll get to in a moment. But first, just your thoughts on tonight's severe weather outlook.
Well, the issue with tonight is that it's going to be a late situation. I don't anticipate any storms in southeast Wisconsin until around or after midnight. That's always concerning because most people are in bed. So the recommendation always is, of course, to have yourself some sort of audio alert to alert yourself if there's dangerous weather approaching your home. While you're sleeping. For most people, that's a phone. For some other people, that's a weather radio. That's always the biggest concern, is late night thunderstorms. The storms are expected to develop in north central Minnesota and northwest Wisconsin at some point this evening, and then they'll make the track south into southern Wisconsin. As is typical for storms that come through late night, they typically are moving into an environment where conditions are a little less conducive to maintaining their strength. We cool down at night and so forth. In the case of tonight, we're seeing some other ingredients, and without getting too deep into the science, we're seeing at least some ingredients that lead us to believe that the storms, to some extent, are going to maintain their strength, or at least not completely fizzle out by the time they get to the Milwaukee area. And so that's what's concerning. Somewhere between about midnight and 4, maybe 5 a.m., that's the time of concern for tonight. Then the storms get out of here. That probably be by daybreak, but it's the pre-dawn hours that are most concerning.
Well, we could certainly use the rain.
Oh boy, how's the lawn?
Right, green as it can be. Question from someone on the WTMJ talk and text line, and I don't know unless you're seeing something in particular that would cause them to ask this question. Is there a derecho risk tonight, overnight, through much of Wisconsin? And that's a very specific type of weather event.
It is, and it's let me put it this way, it's a non-zero chance. So what I'm trying to say there is it's not necessarily perfect, ideal conditions for the development of a derecho, but it's not off the table. And what that essentially is a line of thunderstorms that, for a bowing line of thunderstorms, sort of a curved line of storms that, for various reasons, moves at an extremely fast pace and has extremely powerful straight line winds associated with it on the order of 80 or 90 miles per hour. So winds that are stronger than the weakest tornadoes, that is indeed part of the concern overnight tonight. I won't say it's a high likelihood, but it is definitely something that that we'll be watching during the evening hours. And if we see indications of that developing during the evening hours before it gets too late, that's going to lead all us meteorology types to stay up late and watch how things develop overnight and possibly have to work late into the night or the wee hours of tomorrow morning to let folks know, because there are your garden variety thunderstorms, there are your marginal severe thunderstorms, but derecho thunderstorms, because of the damaging winds that they produce, that's a serious, dangerous type of weather scenario.
Well, on that point of being up late tonight, Craig, I know you and some of the other meteorologists in town certainly help keep people safe in these storms. So appreciate you being on the air with us then, and perhaps once again overnight, my friend.
Thanks, Craig.
You're very welcome.
That's meteorologist Craig Copleen. Again, watch for that chance of severe storms overnight tonight. 8:23 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
I thought of you immediately when I saw the video of this man from Northern California. He's back home after spending more than a week lost in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Lucas McClish, 34 years old, who, by the way, when they found him, did not look like he was 34 years old. He says he left for a three-hour hike from his hometown of Boulder Creek on Tuesday, June 11th, getting lost, he says, because fires had wiped out many landmarks. They launched air and ground searches for them, had a hard time finding him, declared him missing on Father's Day, which is June 16th, and he was rescued 4 days later. No major injuries, living on liquids.
I would just make sure that I drank at least a gallon of water every day. But then after, like, getting close to the end of it, I was just, my body needed food and some type of sustenance.
Yeah, so he's just kind of struggling there. He could tell that there is movement there, that people might have been looking for him. They were trying to figure out if they could. He said it moved him to see the number of boots and paws that were on the ground when they finally did find him.
It was just really humbling, and I don't know. It was an awesome experience.
10 days. Ten days. Could you do it? Could you live in the mountains?
You said you thought of me immediately when you saw this story. I can think of two reasons you would have. You go ahead and tell me why.
Because I firmly believe that the human nature is to automatically try to survive, no matter what. That human survival instincts will just kick in. Doesn't mean you're going to be successful, but that right. you're gonna kick in and find a way, or do everything in your power to find a way. And you always say the opposite, like, you know what, I'm out.
Three and a half hours, gone.
I'm done.
I'm looking for an animal to eat me. Please. I've had, this is enough.
Take me, please. Right.
Hey, bears, I'm right here. Go ahead and end
you're
this
making
for me.
Noise so they find you.
Right. Whereas he said he thought he was being tracked by a mountain lion.
Well, said
right?
There was moments there, but he also was just moved by the number of people that were actually searching for him as well, just at the end there. But yeah.
The other reason I think that you might have thought of me, because when he popped up here on the networks this morning, they showed that video of him coming out of the woods and whatever.
Oh.
I did not look good. No. Wow.
Like I said, he is 34 years old. He certainly looked 30 years older in that picture.
It appeared like he was covered in mud or dust or something. Like he had this grayness about him.
His beard had his hair was growing still. His
looked like a guy had been lost in the wilderness for 2 weeks.
Yes, but certainly happy to be found and alive.
3.5-4 hours at most.
No.
Come get me.
Human
I'm right
nature,
here.
No.
Nothing wants to eat me.
You will survive.
I'll never get out of here.
Your body will try to survive.
I get lost at the zoo. I'm done.
I'm eating this peacock.
8:30 on Wisconsin's Morning News. Make it through the
day without you. Give it up for John Sakata.
It's kind of almost deafening.
With billions of cicadas emerging at the same time.
Been a minute, E, since they gave you a cicada update.
Yeah, I was wondering what
cicadas
happened.
Cicadas. Cicadas, not cicadas.
Yeah, get it.
Wisconsin putting them in beer. Chicago is now putting them in shots. Kind of lost our minds over the cicadas this year. A summertime fixture in southern Wisconsin regularly anyway, but paying more attention this year because of this double brood.
Yeah.
For the first time in 200 years, we have two broods emerging at the same time and overlapping. So a lot of people are getting in on the cicadas this year. You, like Lake Geneva has been ground zero for the cicada emergence here in southeast Wisconsin.
And I'm telling you, the difference between a week. So last week, you got out of the car right when you pull up, and you could hear them singing. Yeah, and all that stuff. This time, I got out of the car on Saturday. Huh. Quiet. Didn't see nearly as many flying around. Didn't see the carcasses nearly as much. I'm telling you, I think it might be starting to dissipate.
I mean, Cicada Palooza was well-timed there in Lake Geneva. They had that earlier this month. Topsy-Turvy Brewery there created Buzz Nut Brown Ale with ground-up cicadas in it.
Why?
I don't know why. Because somebody will try it, right? In Chicago, they're putting them in Malort.
There's a lot happening in this bottle.
That's Noon Whistle Brewing on WGN's morning show there, which is pretty wacky if you know the Chicago news landscape.
They like to have fun.
WGN morning show is just a blast. And so they had these guys in from Noon Whistle Brewing. And do folks know what Malort is who are not? I feel like that's a Chicago thing.
I feel like it is, too, a little bit. I mean, it's more there than anywhere else, it seems.
It's already kind of an, I guess if you could think of an equivalent, and they don't taste the same by any means. I've never had Malort, but it would be like a Jaeger. To Wisconsin.
I guess,
Hey, do a shot of Jaeger. So in Chicago, it's Malort, right? It's kind of nasty anyway. Well, now they're infusing it with cicadas.
Some brave souls even tried a couple whole cicadas in their shots.
So wait, you're saying that people are also putting the cicada in the cicada infused Malort?
Uh-huh. There it
we,
is.
We had a couple.
Yeah, we had a couple. And so
Why?
Dude did tell WGN they're not just going out back and plucking them off the dumpster. Like, they're taking care of the cicadas for those who wish to have a whole one.
To make sure the cicadas are totally sterile. Obviously, we're a brewery, so we're very process-driven and conscious of chemistry and different bacteria and stuff like that. So they have been sterilized in an alcohol solution and cooked to an internal temperature of 225.
All right.
225 is, I guess, the temp you want.
Very nice.
Okay.
Good, good. Now that's the way I want to eat those.
Would you do it on a dare?
Sure.
I guess.
Try anything once, won't you?
No, not anything. I don't know. Like,
prepare, though.
Eat them, drink them, or just enjoy the music. The Cicada Invasion 2024. On a dare, Steph. Whole cicada in the shot of Malort.
Oh, absolutely.
Have you had Malort?
What do you think?
I think you probably have. Probably.
No, I have. Yes. It's not a regular thing, but yes. Absolutely.
Was the Jaeger shot once. Like a good comparison, like to what it would mean for us in Wisconsin?
I think it's a fair comparison. I think Jaeger's a little more mainstream.
Yeah. All right.
Than Malort.
What do you see on the road?
And let me just say, I got real excited when the cicada came on.
Okay.
I love that bit. I'm sorry. It's my 80s.
It's a good bit.
Yeah, it's a good bit.
Cicadas, not cicadas.
It's good. All right. So the roads are looking pretty good. Things are definitely thinning out a little bit. We are still seeing some slowdowns. 94 westbound just before the stadium interchange is a little bit slow. Could possibly have to do with this 94 West ramp from St. Paul Avenue. The left lane is blocked now due to a crash. So, yeah, definitely a little bit slow right there if you are heading west out of downtown. And then otherwise, 894 westbound, Mitchell to the Hale, that is still a little bit slow as well. I'm Steph Graham for your Johnson & Sons Paving Time Saver Traffic.
Real quick, we have breaking Packers news, the announcement of the successor to Mark Murphy as president and CEO. We'll do that when we come back. Plus, one of the more extraordinary statements ever made on this year's program. Eric Bilstead would give up fireworks forever for this. And there is one such show coming to the Milwaukee area. Both of those stories next. Breaking news here this morning from 1265 Lombardi Avenue. It appears the Green Bay Packers have chosen a successor to the longtime president and CEO, Mark Murphy, and it's going to be a front office guy by the name of Ed Policy. That, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, which has pushed this out, some Packers news quoting it as well. Policy has been with the Green Bay Packers since 2012. 53 years old. He's been in the non-football part of the front office.
And we should point, I'm sorry to cut you off there, but I was just going to point out that Murphy isn't being replaced per se. He's just coming up at that age where he would have to move.
Mandatory retirement age for the bylaws of the Green Bay Packers 70? Is that Murphy is 70 years old, and Murphy will hit that in, I believe, next year. So he has 1 year remaining as president and CEO. As an owner, Eric, I'll go ahead and review those bylaws for you.
Yeah, you should take a look at
just,
that.
And just take a look at that and report back to you.
He had a pretty good run. Murph, huh?
Yeah, I've seen some stuff, done some things. I think by all accounts, you know, folks have been happy with him and his leadership. Built out Titletown there. A lot of that is Murphy's leadership, but that area, what would that be, just west of Lambeau Field? You got the hotel there, a lot of the entertainment district, all of those other things. Was instrumental in bringing the draft to Green Bay, which will be next year, and his crowning achievement.
Maybe multiple Super Bowls would have been,
I would hope so by that point, right? We'll be celebrating a Super Bowl again. All good. So Ed Policy will be the guy, according to PackersNews.com, 53 years old, and again, been with the team for quite some time, over a decade. If the name is familiar with you, Carmen Policy is his father. He was with the 49ers for a billion years during a lot of those glory years in San Francisco.
Fireworks, schmeyerworks. Who needs them? When you can see something so much more amazing. Drone shows are the new thing. There's been drone shows popping up more and more, whether it's at football games, whether it's at graduation commencements at different universities, or to celebrate even July 4th. More and more choreographed drone shows have been hired and performed, if you will, for lack of a better term. And they're really starting to gain more and more traction.
We're seeing more drone shows, cooler designs, and bigger drone shows.
That is Matthew Sanker. He's with Firefly Drones. I spoke with him because they're putting on a huge show for free in honor of the Villa Terrace here in Milwaukee. 100th anniversary of the Villa Terrace Art Museum in Milwaukee, right there near Bradford on the lakefront there, is going to be July 10th. So they're celebrating this 100th anniversary with this free drone show. And Sanker says they're going all in on this.
I will say that this is probably the most intricate show we've made to date. There's just a lot of different aspects to it, as well as just some probably the most dynamic movements and transitions between formations. So I'd say the finale is probably going to be the best part, naturally, but the whole show is absolutely worth watching.
So they put together these iconic images. They have animation. The drones move, so you see the figures move in the sky. We saw it when there was a drone show at the Badger game. It was a Badger Ohio State.
Ohio State game. Yeah, you and I were both there, and it was blown away.
Last fall, it was a primetime game, so the sun was down, and they just enormous, just floating over Camp Randall. Bucky walking, and then they like jump around.
It like sort of animates, right? It's phenomenal.
Just super cool.
But that was only like 10 minutes, hey?
Right.
This one is 20 minutes. That's long.
Which is a long time, and what they're able to do now is they continue to get into this. He says it's going to be incredible.
I'd like to say, without a bias, or perhaps with one, the best show of the year.
So I will say this, though. So I talked to him, and I said, okay, so what? I mean, this show is going to be awesome. It's, again, July 10th in Villa Terrace, right there in that area by Bradford Beach in that stretch there. And it's for free, 20 minutes long. But I asked him, what's his go-to? What's his dream gig? What could be the best drone show ever that he'd want to perform?
You know what? I'd say something more patriotic is coming up. It's just in a year or two is the 250th anniversary of the United States, and that's going to be quite the 4th of July celebration. So just looking to be a part of a fantastic program, and that'd definitely be my dragon I'm chasing, is just probably to put thousands of drones in the sky, the world's largest American flag or something like that.
Yes. Think about that. 250th anniversary. They'll have fireworks blowing off the drones by then.
Out of them.
Yes.
Gifts to the crowd.
And I should point out, though, that Firefly, they say, they're like, look, fireworks are great. They're not anti-fireworks. They're just saying, hey, there's some really awesome stuff that we're able to do now with
these
drones.
Maybe they could spell out some words from the Declaration.
They could. Right. They've done it. They've actually done there's different universities that have had the name of the university in the sky during commencement and then it changes to something else. You can have them do anything. Just a matter of time and commitment for each
we
show.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
So July 10th. Now, that one won't have that. This one's in honor of Villa Terrace, the art museum there. July 10th, free show along the lakefront. We'll have more details as it gets closer.
WTMJ Forecast is sponsored by Dave Dre Camp Heating, where your comfort is their family's tradition. High of 84 degrees today, a lot of sunshine, a little bit cooler near the lake. But once again tonight, chance of showers and storms. Some could be on the strong to severe side. WTMJ meteorologist Craig Copleen joining us earlier saying it's largely going to be an overnight event. In fact, he thought things don't reach Milwaukee and much of southeast Wisconsin until after midnight.
Right, yeah. So if you have anything going on tonight, per se, you're likely good.
All right, so sorry, you still got to go to Little League. That's a problem for you. Yeah, sorry, pal. Good show today. Also, the breaking news, just to be aware of, multiple sources now. Tom Pelissero jumping on this as well from NFL Network, saying that Mark Murphy's successor has been chosen. Let me get you this from Pelissero. The Packers Board of Directors voted unanimously this morning to approve Ed Policy as the franchise's new president and CEO, per sources. Move that makes Policy the de facto owner of the NFL's only community-owned franchise starting in July of 25. Policy's been with the team for more than a decade now. He's currently the chief operating officer and general counsel.
So were you in on
an in-house hire? Yeah, I was consulted as a team owner.
Process.
Right. Talked to my people up there and just said, I like Ed.
Can you imagine if they did that at like Lambeau? But y'all stand there.
What do y'all think?
Right. You good with this guy?
A round of applause. Round of applause for Ed Policy.
Hey! Yeah.
How about this guy over here? All right. Ed, I guess the ownership is spoken.
It's yours. Here's the gavel.
This should be an interesting owners meeting next month. 8:58, WTMJ's Political Power Hour, up next.